Good afternoon. The official clock says 2:15, so I guess we'll get started. I'm Jeff Burton, and you'll notice this is session number 152, Stories from the Borderlands. All of our sessions are being taped, and you can pick up CDs of these later, and so later on when we make comments, we'll have to have you come to the microphone and talk into that. Now you're all looking up here for Robert Kirby, right? That's probably why you're here. But he contacted me this morning and said that he might be a little late. He's speaking at the Salt Lake Board of Education or something. He'll try to get here as soon as he can. Busy guy. And we do want to hear from him. He was on the board of directors of Sunstone for a long time. It was always fun to have him come to the meetings. He had lots of neat stories. Anyway, most of us here at the symposium are in the borderlands in one way or another, or we've got a loved one or a friend or somebody who's on the fringes and wants to find out what they should do. And most of us here are here because we've managed to figure out how to do it. We've overcome difficulties, and we're existing or we're really enjoying our time in the borderlands, or have in the past. And and unfortunately, as I took a little poll yesterday at the workshop I was at, many of us are in the closet to one degree or another about what our situation is. And what I'd like this session to do, if we can, sorry. If we can, is give an opportunity for us to share some stories with each other, and perhaps find ourselves a forum where we can be open and honest with each other without getting angry or upset. After I've made my presentation, which will be short, hopefully, if Robert's come by then, we'll ask him to make his presentation. Otherwise, then I'll ask you to think about some kind of story, and I'll tell you a little bit about what we want to do. But we'd like to have you share maybe an experience with us in 5 minutes or less, so we give plenty of chance to everybody to talk, of ways that you found of making the borderlands successful for you. We don't necessarily want to know, you know, all the gory details of why you're in the borderlands, what's wrong with the church and all that, but we don't want that kind of thing. But if you've had some successful experiences, we'd like to hear those. And also, primarily, I'd like to have you think about ways that you found of being more open and honest with people around you, your family, your friends, your ward members, your job colleagues, and so forth. And we'll keep this on a light, not a light level, but humor wouldn't hurt us here. So we want to make sure that we all use good taste and avoid blame and recrimination, that kind of thing. And I think if we share with each other some stories, it might give some of our newer borderlanders some hope, and also show them ways that they can deal with the problems. I've had many, many stories from my life in the borderlands, but I'm going to try to stick with those that were dealing with the open and honesty issues, and maybe that'll be interesting to you. If any of you are like me, the church would love me to wear this. It's my little scarlet D for being a doubter, and I'm not an out and out disbeliever. I just don't know. You know, I haven't received that burning testimony that's credible to me, and I'm a person who, you know, from very earliest age was always skeptical, questioning. I've gone into science and engineering and so forth. So, you know, I teach at the university, and we're always looking for statistical significance and credible evidence and things before we could say something's true. And you know, you can't get away from that. And I haven't had what I would consider you know, the testimony experience to prove to me that the Joseph Smith story, for example, is completely accurate as it is being told to us today. I also have a hat that somebody gave me. It says, you probably can't see it, but it says, "Just believe." I wear these to the ward outings and stuff, but the bishop laughs. Most of the rest don't laugh. I've got another little thing that was given to me recently because I've been on a church service mission. You know, the missionary badge, which is, I'm going to keep that. It's been interesting. But, you know, we're all wearing some sort of thing like this, whether it's W or G for gay or Q for questioner or whatever your problem is. You're here at Sunstone because you found somebody, something that you like and will help you with dealing with the issues and problems that come to you. Let me just start off with early in my life. I'll tell you a few of my stories, and then if Robert comes, he'll tell you some of his. If not, we'll open it up for you guys. When I was a youth, of course, I didn't really know anything. I mean, I was waiting for that testimony to come, but it never came. Finally, when I was 20 years old, the bishop cornered me, and he brought me into his office. He said, "We want you to go on a mission. All your friends have gone on missions." And I was thinking, well, you know, I told the bishop, you know, I really can't go out there and tell people I know. It was an honesty issue for me. And he said, well, here's how we dealt with that. He said, "What do you think about Jesus?" I said, "Yeah. Do you have any problem with Jesus' teachings about the Christian life?" "No, no." "Well, okay, we're going to take care of this then." And so I went to Japan on my mission, where they don't care whether the church is true or not. They're interested in knowing whether or not Christianity is going to make their life fuller and happier, and if they bring into their life. What I told them, primarily our investigators, is if you adopt this Christian way of life and you join with us, one of the best Christian churches on earth, you know, you're really going to, your life's going to be different and you're going to be happier. And I told this to a return mission president, our ward, and he was really confused. "Well, I don't know. How did that work?" I said, "Well, I don't know, but I had 60 baptisms over there. So it must have done something." So, you know, there are ways around some of these deals. When I was in Japan, again, I never a single time bore my testimony because I didn't have to. It wasn't really required. And in fact, the way we translated the word "I know" over there a lot of times was "I think" rather than "I know." So it worked out good for me, and I was happy. And I was a branch president, and I was a traveling elder, and all those kind of things too. So you don't, if you're dealing with any kind of problem, it doesn't mean that you can't be an active, involved Latter-day Saint doing the things that your parents and your friends and your bishop would like you to do. Over the years, you know, I've been on stake high councils, and I've been in bishop bricks and so forth. I've been a branch president, but I've never been a bishop. But, you know, every year you got to go to the, or every 2 years you got to go to the temple recommend interview and so forth. And I handle that by saying things like, I don't know if the church is true or not, but I believe in the church. And that seems to do is good enough, you know. I fully supported the church. I think it's wonderful. I think it's very influential in the lives of millions of people, and therefore it's worth supporting. Those kind of discussions are not dishonest, because they really are the way I really feel. And usually that's enough. I've never had anybody turn me down for anything, although we've sometimes had some discussions about it. But it's good, because when you talk that way to other people, it educates them. Now, the bishops, they've been in a couple, 3 years. They know there's lots of people like me and you out there. Sometimes it's a shock for them, I think, the first few months. But, years ago, I don't know if any of you in the audience when we did, when I did the phenomenon of the closet doubter thing at Sunstone. Is anybody here then? One person. Have you ever read that article, The Phenomenon of the Closet Doubter? Anyway, at that session, J.D. Williams came out of the closet. And it was quite an experience. But The church, after that session, they heard about this thing and they did a study called the Survey of Religion and Life or something like that, and I didn't know about it until after it was over. It was English-speaking members. They polled them to find out, you know, how many closet doubters do we have and how many doubters do we have and so forth. And for some reason, they invited me to come down to church headquarters and they told me the results and asked me what I thought about it. So I thought that was really nice of them, but it turned out that in the results, and of course they were never published, but nobody ever denies it if you bring it up, it's that about 30% of active Mormons actually have questions and doubts going on in their minds all the time. Another 50 or 60% or 65% or 70 somewhere there, where they didn't give me the exact numbers they got, are true believers. These are the people who are the full tithe payers, the people who are there every Sunday. They bought into it 100%. It's working great for them. And we wouldn't want to change it for those people. And then there's 5% of the people, and these are active Mormons, who are really closet doubters. I mean, they just don't think it's not right, but they're here because all the reasons, you know, family, job, and so forth. So those were some interesting statistics that came out of that. Marlene and I moved to Bountiful about 15 years ago, and I was asked to speak, and then for one reason or another, they never gave me any calling, and we kind of drifted into inactivity. You know, I wasn't totally inactive, but I gave up my temple recommend and so forth, didn't renew it. One of the bishops, I won't say who it was because this is being taped, but one of the bishops came to our house and said, you know, he knew me and what was going on. He says, why don't you get active? And I said, okay, I will be active. I'll get active, reactivated if I can just be myself over there. I can just tell people the way I feel and just be completely myself. And his response to me was, if you read my Borderlands column, you might have seen this already, but his response to me in all seriousness said, you know, it doesn't take much to disrupt a ward. And he's absolutely right. We have to be very, very careful about how we deal with our honesty with other people and our openness. Because other people are on the edge, and they can be tipped over the edge if we're not really careful. But anyway, so during that mission, during that bishop's tenure, we didn't get completely reactivated, for sure. But the next bishop, or one of the later bishops, came, and I told him the same thing, and he said, well, yeah, let's give it a try. So, you know, that led to me getting my temple recommend back and going back to church and going on a service mission for 2 years, and it was really a great experience. And I have a much better appreciation now that I've done it of the people who work downtown at the big building, you know. They're very dedicated, very, high-quality people who are well-versed in the things that they do, and I'm really, really appreciative of having served with them. I worked with their environmental group, working on things like, you know, mold control in meeting houses and how to control the transmission of tuberculosis in the Philippine temple, things like that, which are related to ventilation. We also did a project to try to reduce the odors that come from refinishing gym floors. You're familiar with that problem? I talked them into considering seriously or moving to water-based and then having more ventilation and stuff. But one of the more important projects I worked on was meeting house ventilation, and making sure that every meeting house has enough fresh air during the time you're sitting in there to keep it still maintained in healthy condition. There's sometimes in the winter and in the spring and the fall when there may be no air being delivered to the meeting, to the ward house, because it's not calling for heating or cooling, and so the fan doesn't come on. So those are some of the projects that I worked on, and about 40 projects over a two-year period of time, really fun. If you ever thought about doing a mission, I mean, they can usually find something for you to do at any time. I was 4 hours a week for 2 years. You know, you go down there and tell them what you want to do, and they'll figure out some place for you to serve, and it's a lot of fun. Anyway, I'll give you my last little story. I you know, I told the high priest early on that I was not a true believer, but that I was completely supportive. I was not a disbeliever by any means, but I was just not, you know, a true believer. That I was fully supportive and all of those things. But, you know, I was handled with kid gloves kind of after that. And the high priest group leader found something in the handbook of instructions that said that before you can teach a quorum, you have to have a strong testimony. So he came to my house and told him, I'm sorry, Jeff, we're not going to be able to have you teach our high priest quorum anymore. Which is okay. I mean, it gave me a little bit, you know, I was able to write a letter and say, you know, why don't we change this and we'll see what happens the next version of the handbook of instructions. But I also bore my testimony. The bishop actually invited me. I checked with him first. Is it okay if I stand up in front of the ward and tell him what my story is? And yes, okay. he gave me permission. So I bore my testimony to the ward, and I told them, you know, basically that my testimony was based on faith and not so much on knowledge. And I told this to the stake president earlier when I got my mission call and got the temple recommend and so forth renewed. He said, well, in the end, isn't that all any of us have? That's what the stake president told me. And my experience is the farther up away from the ward you go, the more tolerant they seem to be of this. You know, it's maybe it's at the ward. I heard we were at a meeting, Charles and I were at a meeting yesterday, and somebody said, the church is true from the ward down. I don't know about that. But anyway, that's my experience. And I think it was interesting. After I got done giving my testimony, which I explained to people about some of the things that I feel and some of the things I know, I try to divide my testimony into two portions. One that's testable, like Jesus' teachings. Those are easy to figure out. I can bear you a firm witness that honesty is the best policy. You better be honest, because in seventh grade I had an experience which I won't relate to you, but you know, it taught me that honesty is the best policy. And the same thing with generosity and kindness and patience and all the rest. So yes, when those kind of things, I have a firm, knowledgeable testimony. When it comes to the other things, like the Joseph Smith story, the Book of Mormon, the things that are not really testable in a scientific, empirical way, I take it on faith that they're okay, that God's involved in our lives, that He's involved in this, and maybe it's even true for those who really, truly believe it is. I don't know how it works exactly, but I'm willing to accept it on faith. So that's kind of the way I told our ward members. And after I got done, there was this kind of silence, and then all of a sudden, a very nice brother from our ward jumped up on the stand, and he tried to kind of rehabilitate me. Oh, I know Jeff Burton. He's one of the most compassionate people. And, you know, he went on and on trying to... He thought maybe I'd kind of slit my throat with the word. I don't think so. And then the very next person to get up was a sister that I know, and you know, I know her, but I don't know anything about her, and she came out of the closet right there, the ward of the testimony meeting. She said, I've been on the internet, I've read all this stuff, and I was just about ready to go inactive, and then I decided, hey, this isn't worth it. The church is so much better for me than getting all upset about this. And that's the way the whole meeting went. And somebody after the meeting said to me, or just before the meeting, said, I remember you spoke to us 15 years ago. Now, how many people remember a sacrament meeting talk from 15 years ago? Because I was giving a similar kind of thing 15 years ago, and people will probably remember that testimony meeting. So I want you to think about that, about the idea of being more open. I mean, I've got friends. I know people. I've talked to hundreds over the years or seen their emails or their letters. I've got a whole drawer full of files of people and stuff have read my book and commented and so forth. There are people out there that even their wives don't know what's going on in their minds. If you can't be open and honest with your spouse, something's got to happen here. There's lots and lots of people who, you know, their friends don't know what's going on. Their parents, their children, their ward members. And, you know, silence is not exactly dishonesty. And I don't tell you should rush right out and be open and honest to everybody. I'm saying try to come up with a little plan for yourself as how eventually you'll let the important people in your life know what's going on, because it'll make you feel a lot better. And how else are we going to get the church to accept people like us if we don't just come out and tell them what's going on? I feel very accepted in my ward. I've got people stopping me on the street now right in our ward. Hey, Jeff, I really enjoyed your testimony. Well, that was great. You know, I really wanted to hear that. Our kids were so happy. Da-da-da. So I encourage you not to do anything that's drastic or precipitous, but to think about how you can come to some sort of understanding with the important people around you and come out to... And that'll do us all a world of good. Is Robert Kirby here yet? He didn't come in, I guess. Well, when he comes in, we'll break in. But what I'd like to do now, we were going to have the rest of our respondents. And I'd like you to come up here and sit next to Charles if you're ready to, if somebody's already at the microphone. When you come up, if you'd give us your name, and then take no more than 5 minutes. And relate to us something positive, some good experience you've had, something about how you were found honest to be the best policy, or something that you did that got you a temple recommend when you couldn't get it before, or something like that. And then we'll go till 3:15. But if you have any questions, of course, you can come up and ask at the podium too. So I'll turn it over to you. Oh, one other thing. You were handed... Matt passed out for me, my new friend Matt, passed out a little one-page survey form. I wondered if, just for the, I'm going to put to have you do it if you would, fill it out and then turn it back into matter, put it on the table at the back, and I'll compile these and I'll put them in one of the Borderland columns, and just to see what kind of a response we get. But thank you so much for coming. We'll now turn the time over to you. I'm sorry, did Robert come in?
Yeah.
Oh, Robert, why don't you come on up? Robert. Well, let's see. Robert, are you ready to, or do you want to gather your thoughts, or do you want to go right away?
Okay.
I don't know. What did you do to the crowd?
I was a straight man for your presentation. We talked about good experiences, borderlandic stories, how to be honest and open. Okay. Take as much time as you want, Robert, though. Please.
Okay. I'm Charles Wright, and I'm from Evanston, Wyoming. And the other day, in one of the other sessions, I related that it took about 3 hours for me to go through for a temple recommend, mainly because everything that they asked me, I was qualifying, and I'm trying to explain. Like one of the questions, like they'd ask me, well, do you believe that so and so is the prophet or revelator of the church? And I would say, pragmatically speaking, and they'd say, what do you mean by pragmatically speaking? And I say, well, by definition, the president of the church is sustained as prophet, seer, and revelator. And then they'd say, well, do you believe in, are you honest? And I'd say, well, I'm generally speaking. And the person says, the bishop says, well, honesty is like pregnancy. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. And I says, well, I guess I must be fully pregnant. And then he says, when you say generally honest, what are you saying? And I says, well, the other day I attended priesthood meeting, and I says, and the lesson was on the Negro and the priesthood, and this is before the Negro could hold the priesthood. And I says, I just sat there and I said nothing. And I says, but by saying nothing, I felt like I was being untrue and to myself. I says, but at the same time, I wasn't in the business to try to destroy the testimonies of other people. And he says, and what about the Negro and the priesthood? And I says, well, Joseph Smith ordained 2 Negroes to the priesthood himself, and Brigham Young sent Elias as a missionary at 70 to Canada, and he was a Negro. And I says, now I understand why we say, because they say that they were neutral or not as obedient as the rest of us in the pre-existence. And I says, but I just sat there and I said nothing. And he said, well, I think you did right. And anyway, he says, you know, it's interesting. He says, I have a lot of people who come in here and I ask them, are you honest? Because they used to ask the question, are you honest? Now they ask the question, are you honest in your dealings with your fellow men? And he says, and a lot of the people that come in to me, they tell me with a straight face that they're honest. And he says, and I know that they're not. And he says, because he was a businessman in the community also. And he says, but as a bishop, I am to accept their perception of themselves in terms of the concept of honesty and what honesty means to them. I came down here to Salt Lake to attend my daughter's marriage at the temple. And when I got out of the temple, our stake president came up to me and he says, Charlie, would you I'd like you to think of going on a mission. And I says, no way, Jose. And he says, no, right now I'm serious. He says, I'm not talking to you as your friend. I'm talking to you as your stake president. He says, you know, you just got out of the temple. And he says, you made covenants that you was willing to give of your time, talent, and so forth, the building up of the kingdom of God. Does that have any meaning to you? And I says, it does. He says, well, what do you say now? And I says, well, I still don't want to do it. And he says, well, I want you to think about it. And I was on the high council at the time. And he says, so finally, when he was talking to me again, I says, you've got to know something about me, President Phillips. And he says, what's that? And I says, you got to know that I'm not one who can get up and bear his testimony that he knows that God lives, that Jesus is the Christ, that Joseph Smith is a prophet, and that this is the only true church. And he says, oh, I'm aware of that. I said, oh, okay. And he says, because I happen to know that you're more scientific in your thinking, and you have to have some kind of evidence for each one of these beliefs. He says, but you have a desire to believe. And I said, well, I have the desire to believe, but having the desire to believe doesn't mean that it's true. He says, well, at least think about it. And finally kind of got out that I was at least thinking about a mission. And so one of the ward members says, my father is a mission president over in the Philippines, and he's looking for senior missionaries, and would you consider that? And I says, well, I'd consider a mission, but no way do I want to go on a proselyting mission, because I can't go out and testify to things that I question. And so he wrote to his father, and his father called me back, and he says, you don't have to worry about proselyting. He says, as a senior missionary, you can pretty much create your own kind of mission. And he says, would you consider coming to the Philippines then? I says, yes. And he says, you can provide leadership. And he says, and that's all we would need is leadership and people who try to understand other people and from where they're coming from. And of course, I'd been a school counselor. Oh, and Jeff's saying, your time's up. And anyway, so I got a call from the church headquarters and asking me if I'd go on a humanitarian service mission to Romania. And I told him I couldn't by the 17th of February because I was a school counselor. And I had to wait until at least the summertime. But then I was called to Romania and served as a humanitarian service mission. And on that mission, I was required not to ever bear my testimony. I was required never to try to teach the gospel. I was required to provide humanitarian services without any ulterior motives. And the direction came to me from President Nieswander, who was our regional, and he's in the presidency of the 70s. And the other, not too long ago, they asked me if I'd be the high priest group leader. But coming home from my mission in 92, or 93, I mean, that's when they had the excommunication of the six. And I was just devastated when I'd heard that these people had been excommunicated, because I felt some of these people were the most honest and open and real people and had much more of a testimony than I had. And so I've refused any kind of a teaching position until just lately. And the high priest group leader says, "We'd like you to be our high priest group leader." I says, "Well, I know that at the end of every lesson you're supposed to bear your testimony." I says, "But I can't do that. I can relate my religious experiences, things of that type, but no formal kind of testimony." He says, "Well, I can live with that." So I'm a high priest group leader, a teacher.
Thank you. Yeah, it's you. And also for your setting.
We're going to get some water.
It's quite as hot.
It could be my age, you know.
I missed the first part of this because I was talking to the Salt Lake City School District administrators. Let's see if I can do this. This is worse than church. And it occurs to me there, it occurs to me now, like it did there, that you people really ought to have a lot more self-respect than to listen to me. I recently wrote a column in the Salt Lake Tribune about families who pressure their children to marry in the temple, specifically daughters, that their parents will tell them, "If you get married in the temple, we'll pay for your wedding. But if you don't, you might as well get on a bus and go to Vegas, because we're not paying for it." Generated a phenomenal amount of response, more than I've gotten in recent years. Apparently that's a real nerve with people. And one of the things that emerged out of that was this issue that people will go in and lie to their bishops in order to get permission to do certain things. And I have to confess that I used to do that myself. That it was a whole lot easier to lie than it was to be honest about what it was that I was. It caused everyone less stress, and things could go along and flow normally if I would do that. I had no real objections to anything about church, only that I had a different take on things than your typical true-believing Mormon. I had an opportunity, however, to change that. My family moved to Harriman from Springville, where we'd lived for 25 years. We moved to Harriman after my wife finished chemotherapy about 5 years ago. And I moved into the ward then. I left the ward where I was just Robert, the local neighborhood jerk who wrote in the paper. And I moved to Harriman as Robert Kirby, the Salt Lake Tribune columnist who makes fun of Mormons. And when they found out that it was me that had put an offer on this house, my neighbor who was in the bishopric at the time told me that they actually had a PEC meeting about me specifically. What were they going to do in the ward when Robert Kirby showed up and started making fun of everyone in the paper? And what were they going to do about Sister A and Sister B, get their feelings hurt, and Brother C, who's really a jerk? And that was really interesting to me, but it was this break in who I was with who I suddenly was perceived to be that allowed me to, for the first time since I could remember, be completely honest with my bishop. And so we moved in, and I sat down with him one day after we'd been in a short time, and he was ready to give me a job. You could almost see him smacking his lips, you know, "Oh boy, fresh meat, let's put him to work." And I said, "Well, before we do this, maybe you ought to ask me the standard temple recommend questions." And he did. And during that interview, I actually watched his hair get whiter. He is probably one of the most humble men I know. A very good man. And I grew to love him a great deal. But it was time for me to be honest about the things that I believed and thought and where I departed from. And the thing was, is he had no experience dealing with Mormons like me, because Mormons like me typically leave. There's no advantage to being there if you don't believe enough of it to make it all true. And so typically leadership, at least on a local level, doesn't know what to do with people like me. And he just sat there with his mouth open. And he said, okay, well, I appreciate you taking the time to come in. And that was pretty much the last time I talked to him for 2 years. I was always nice, shook my hand every Sunday, and asked how I was doing, and seemed genuinely to care about me, but there was this distance, this gulf between us. One day, about 6 months before he was released, he came home and found me clearing the snow off of his driveway. And he got out of the car and he just kind of stared at me, and you could almost read his mind. You know, why is somebody who believes what you believe do the things that you do? Why do you do your home teaching? Why do you come to church every Sunday? Why do you go clear the snow off of widow's driveways and my driveway? And he called me in about a week later. And he said, Robert, I need to apologize to you for being a bad bishop. And I said, what? You won't get that very often, I guarantee you. He said, 2 years ago when you sat down in my office and you told me things, he said, I got scared. I didn't know what to do. He said, and so I did the only thing I could. I ignored you. He said, so I'm here to apologize for that. I said, well, you don't have to. I said, I understand how things like that work. You've been a good bishop anyway, and we parted as really good friends. I see him in church now all the time. We sit together and talk. I got a new bishop now, and I'm in the business of making his hair white. I believe, though, that honesty has actually made my life as a Mormon better. I believe that when they know what they can expect from me and what they can require from me, it actually makes our relationships more workable. They don't come and ask me to do things that I feel uncomfortable doing. They don't ask me, I believe one of the things that they do ask me is, why do you go to church? And I get asked that quite a bit from the stuff that I write in columns. You get X or anti-Mormons who write, why do you go to church if you say you believe this? And that's always perplexed me, because I go to church for the same reason I stay married or remain a citizen of the United States. Just because some of it I don't like doesn't mean all of it's a waste of time. And that works for me. I know that it doesn't work for everyone, but that's how it works for me. And I wish I'd been honest a long time ago. I would have avoided a lot of the pitfalls that I had before. Jeff?
Thank you so much.
You bet.
About to make a statement. I've been intrigued with this borderlands concept that Jeff has put forth in Sunstone, and in that for those who doubt, sort of that was, that's what got you into it in the first place, wasn't it?
Those who wonder.
Generally, my experience in the church, most of the church situation I've been in, the impression that those who are up leading and expounding the doctrine and so on, don't say that's not legitimate, man. That's the message that comes across, not legitimate. I mean, in my ward, we have a church leader in a very high position who made the statement that what the church needs are strong testimonies and strong testimony bearing about the certainty of the gospel. And that's been really tough for me. Now, I like him, I like my ward, and so on, but to express thing, and I think I'm in the group two pretty well, although there's some things I think, some things I believe very strongly. I feel like I've had some spiritual experiences which tell me that certain things are right, you know, that are in the category of Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon and things like that, that are unprovable. But it's just that's come to me that is right. But that's not everything. I've just kind of been mealy-mouthed and sort of wandered along and will ask tough questions once in a while in classes, and when, particularly when there's some, you know, dead certain person that says that this is that the earth, there was a flood because that had mountains that all fell down before the flood, so if the earth's flat, then the earth could be covered with water. God, I can believe that. But what do you do? That's right. Nice. Okay. But I think that I'm sort of not all the way where Curb is or where Jeff is. We just be honest and it'll all work out, because I think, you know, like, was John Wayne in that Marine movie? What was it? He came out, and when they put him in a corner about telling the truth, he said, "You can't take the truth." He was yelling, and he was standing up, and he's big into this. And Tom Cruise, and what was the lady? That was the anyway. Anyway, I think there's a lot to that. That there are a lot of people who have a lot of situations in church where they can't take it, and they don't want it. So I esteem my fellowship and my relationships and so on high enough that I'm not going to give it to them if they don't want it. I guess that's just comments I make.
Hi, my name is Matt Zollinger. I'm a student. And my experience with the Borderlands came from this idealized concept of faith that they have at BYU Idaho, where it's, you know, this perfect faith that's, ineffable, and trying to find an intellectual sounding board for my personal wonderings and or doubts, just to address what Mr. Kirby said and Jeff here, that finding, you know, intellectual honesty with individuals has really helped me feel comfortable with my faith and, my academic experience, because you find other people that are in that same category too. Not necessarily, you know, complete doubters, but someone you can actually have an honest intellectual relationship with brings comfort and peace of mind in, you know, my spiritual and, development. And so I found that honesty and presenting yourself in that manner does away with the minutiae of, you know, of lying and being confused. So I found that expressing yourself to those around you, you gain a better sense of trust and a better sense of self in your intellectual and spiritual pursuits.
Tom Coppin. A few years ago, I wrote Jeff, got a telephone call from him. We don't live very far from each other, so we started hiking on Saturday mornings. We'd walk for an hour, hour and a half, and as we beat through the bushes, these are the things we'd talk about. He'd ask, "Well, how do you cope?" And I always figure everybody has issues, so I don't let issues bother me. They take too much energy. I don't want to waste my time on them. I got other things to do. And there, I don't think there's any sense stirring up family. There's no sense, the ward, the bishop, and especially the stake president. I try to stay out of his hair. And I don't want to call attention to myself in any way, but I am honest. I'm in a new ward now. It's 3 years. I'm not yet comfortable enough to stir anybody up. But a thing I found in the past, and I talked to Jeff about this, is to do the fun thing. And I started campaigning for a calling I always wanted. So I finally got to be primary pianist. And I hung on to this for 5 years, went through 3 presidents. Every time they changed president, they'd call up and say, you want to go? And I said, "What, have I done something wrong?" But I was enjoying being out in there. I jazzed up the songs when the song leader told about going on a hike. I started playing. There was a long, long trail of winding over everybody's head. I guess they're not old enough to recognize that. And then I had my own rendition of I will go, I will do the things the Lord. And so when the kids would march out to class, I'd make this a little louder every time, and then the kids would burst into song. It ended up disturbed the primary presidency because they said, you know, there are other classes meeting in the building, but at least I enjoyed myself and had to give it up when I moved. But it doesn't cost me anything to be pleasant. I like going to church and being entertained. And even touched by what people say. I like to hear what people say. Their honesty, it helps me understand them better. It doesn't bother me to get involved in things. Right now I'm on the activities committee, and we've got a gregarious guy that just takes it over, and my wife says, why don't you say anything? And I said, oh, Larry's taking care of it all. it doesn't matter. But I don't worry too much about honesty. I figure we all lie to some degree, and I'm not advocating lying, but I don't have any compulsion to have to get something off my chest and stir people up. It would be unfair in my eyes to unload some problems onto somebody else. You know, they're my problems. I can live with them. So that's how I cope.
My name is Jack Roddy. I came to Utah 30 years ago, and I'm not Mormon, but I married a Mormon young lady. Her father was in the Council of 70, and before we were married, he and I went out to dinner, and I shared with him that I had no intention of competing with him for the soul of his daughter, that she could remain Mormon if she chose to. And we were married, and 30 years ago, and this is just my observation as an outsider, 30 years ago, on the walls of the homes of Mormon people were the photographs of Joseph Smith. 30 years later, I'm noticing that that's coming down and pictures of Jesus Christ are coming up. That's just my observation. My stepdaughter, who is a devout, radical Mormon, who would hardly even speak to our family for a number of years, discovered Jesus Christ about a year ago. And she is so carried away that in her condominium she has pictures of Jesus in every room. And we went to visit her upon her invitation. I kind of jokingly said to her, I like your new boyfriend. And she said, well, yes, I do too, but I'm ashamed to put a picture of him in my bathroom. When my wife and I were married, we had a business. And in that business, we had a lot of walk-in traffic that came. One of the days I was in the office, and a devout old Mormon man walked into our office, and he said to me, are you LDS? And I don't know why this happened. It wasn't malicious. It just kind of popped out of me. I said, no, sir. God got to me before the missionaries did. And all I want to say is that 30 years later, I think that if we have anything on either side in common to dialogue about, it's the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So thank you.
You know, I have a lot of faults, but one thing I can lay claim to is I've never lied in a Temple Recommend interview, and I've had really long interviews, like you have, because I was so determined to be clean on those in my own conscience. But they never ask the questions that bother me. They're easy questions for me, and I'm able to answer them easily. But what's hard for me, like I said, are not things that are asked. And what you were talking about how your life is easier because you're so straight and clean with your bishop, Robert?
I wouldn't say clean, but that's...
Okay. Well, when you're...
I'm actually very anxious to tell him about my sexual practice.
But you really, you said that you have, you're living a very, you're very, you have a great deal of integrity with your bishop at this point.
Honesty.
Great deal of honesty.
Yeah, I think honesty is actually the best word.
Well, and what I took from your discussion and why I came to this class was... You have found peace and a better life from being honest in that venue with your bishop over the issues that you have. And I'm wondering, there are some issues that we all have some issues in one degree or another, but who we discuss this with? This form was interesting. It said, on number 3, who do you discuss your issues with? Your spouse, your children, your friends, your ward members, your bishop. And I was thinking, you know, I have a large family, and they're almost all of them are now adults. And when I've edged towards some of my issues, they get very agitated. They don't want to hear that their mom is bugged about the whole P word, the plainy word. They don't want to hear about it, and they're agitated. They don't want to hear about it. They want their mom to be something I'm not. And I'm wondering, when is it self-destructive or destructive to those relationships? When is it not worth it? When is it not in their best interest? When is it mean?
Robert, if you want to respond, you need to go to the mic, but I'll respond first. You know, I've heard this story so many times, and I know each one of you have a different situation. I've never met two people who have the same story in the church. Everybody has their own needs. And I think if you went through your entire lifetime keeping the P word in your heart and not worried about it in your mind and not disrupt your family, it'd be fine. What I'm recommending is, that, like Robert, if you find yourself in a situation where you are troubled by your dishonesty, or if you think you're being dishonest, or if you think you're lying, or if you are lying, you better figure out some way to get around that. Now, we all have our issues. If your issues are polygamy and, you know, your family doesn't want to hear about it, you can just say that. You know, I know I've got this big issue, but I know you don't want to hear about it, so we won't talk about it anymore. That's not being dishonest. But what would be dishonest, for example, and I've seen this, maybe, it's hard to say for sure, but, you know, men wanting to be a bishop or in the high council or state presidency or something, and they're willing to say whatever it is necessary to get there, you know, that kind of thing. Now, I don't know if that, I don't have a specific personal report, but I've suspected it from time to time on certain people. And I've had that temptation myself, because the state president one time called me and said, "Jeff, we're thinking about changing the bishopric and wondered if, you know, would you be able to do that if we considered calling you?" That was a kind of a strange call, but, you know, I felt I didn't become the bishop, but I feel like it was he needed to know what the truth was about the way I felt, and I think a bishop does need to have. You know, probably a better bishop if they do have that strong testimony. I don't know. But anyway, I'm getting off the subject. But if dishonesty is troubling you, get away from it. If silence and walking a narrow line is not working for you, stay on there until you're ready to move off of it. That's about all you can say.
Occasionally I get mail from people who wonder about that question. How honest can you be with your children? How honest can you be with your spouse? That's going to differ from person to person. Some spouses are more ready to hear what it is that you're thinking or what you feel than others. some will see it as, you know, an apostasy and file for divorce and run away from you. Ultimately, it gets down to this, and this I learned this from reading a book by P.J. O'Rourke. P.J. says that there is only one absolute human right in the world, and that is to do as you damn well please. But with that comes the only human duty, and that is to accept the consequences for it. I'm willing to accept the consequences for being honest, because the consequences are less punishing to me than the alternative. That doesn't work for everyone, because everyone is in a different situation. I have a very understanding wife. I also happen to have had a series of very understanding bishops. I don't know that I would be honest if the stakes were a lot higher, meaning that I had to suffer an enormous amount of loneliness because of it, because my wife stopped talking to me and people in the world ran away when they saw me, at least more than they do now. So that does change based on your decision. And there's no one great truth for everyone in the church. Everybody has to sort of come to terms with God on their own, or their absence of God, or whatever it is.
Our time is just about up. Anyone else would like to make a comment? If not, thank you so much for coming.
I actually think there was, Jeff.
Oh, was there? Okay, sure. You have to come forward, though. And you have, Dan, 2 minutes.
I've been doing this for a really long time. It's been about 5 years. It's been up and down at home with the ward. Things have been really, really good for quite a while now. Even being honest with people about how I feel about the church and my place within it. And a friend of mine, Russell Moorhead, brought my attention to a poem that I think describes life in the borderlands really well, and I hope you'll mind me wanting to share it with you. To all in the village, I seemed, no doubt, to go this way, and this is, by the way, from the Spoon River Anthology. To all in the village, I seemed, no doubt, to go this way and that aimlessly, but here by the river you can see at twilight the soft-winged bats fly zigzag here and there. They must fly so to catch their food. And if you have ever lost your way at night in the deep wood near Miller's Ford, and dodged this way and now that, wherever the light of the Milky Way shone through, trying to find a path, you should understand I sought the way with earnest zeal, and all my wanderings were wanderings in the quest.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you, Anne, and that was a really beautiful way to end this session. If you would fill that little survey form out, and Matt's going to help me gather those in the back, or put them on the table if you don't see Matt, or leave them out of there on the desk out in the thing, but we'll report the results of this in a later Borderlands column. Thank you so much for coming, and we'll see you next year, maybe.